American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Thursday, February 17th, 2005. And this is Newsreel, your source for independent media and news that will give you the edge you need against the core political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. And if you don't happen to think the core political tyranny is trying to enslave you, then you are not paying attention, man. All you got to do is turn on the news and you'll see all the drug companies trying to pump you full of all their crap. You're going to turn you into a modern-day core political junkie. All you have to do is watch the news. Stay in your cages. Don't question your masters. Don't try to speak out. Don't take a stand on anything, because otherwise you'll be an extremist. And as we all know, all terrorists are extremists, and therefore all extremists are terrorists. This is the logic that they apply to us all. You can read along with me on my news stories by going to my live journal. Now, that's Sean_Kennedy, and you'll know it'll be time to turn the page when I say something like, I got some fan mail. So I'm really happy about that. I'm going to get into the fan mail right away. I actually got a snail mail letter. It wasn't a handwritten letter, but it was still a letter. And it's from James somebody, whose name I'm not going to actually read out on the air, but it's from James. And he seems to be in Frankfort, Indiana. I guess that's Frankfort, Indiana. Me being Canadian, my rapid, you know, American geography is not what it could be. And the letter goes as follows. Dear Mr. Kennedy, wow, you know you're old when. You don't know how long I've waited for the day a free author. This is on a piece of paper. I'm actually reading this off of here. This isn't coming off my laptop screen. This is a real piece of paper. You don't know how long I've waited for the day a free author, a day for a free author to come along. I would like to express my thanks for your book. It has helped me forget the world for a short time. Helped me get through a tough time, much of which I would like to forget, but then again, I wouldn't want to. For to forget that time, I would also forget your book you had written. The one in question is The Scabbed Wings of Abaddon. In fact, I was quite taken aback with this book at first. I hate to say it, but I expected the end. Aww. But the story in between was altogether a masterpiece. Your words are awe-inspiring. I hope to one day write even a little bit close to the brilliance you have created. I hope times are well to you because I am awaiting much more. I hope the times are well to you because I am waiting much more for you and expect nothing but the best. P.S. I do not bestow compliments lightly, and if this brings a smile to your lips, I shall be more grateful. The time I spent to write it was infinitesimal, but I hope you can remember the fan's words when the worst of times brings you down. And that's from an inspired fan, J.R.A.C. So, thanks so much, big guy, for that letter. That was really cool. Understand that I never wanted to be any kind of political activist. This was never the goal. Once again, my original goal was to be a horror writer. Now, I do have a series of books, because a lot of people have dropped me emails saying, hey, you know, now that you're going to be working full-time. Well, sort of full-time. I mean, the show takes about 3 to 4 hours a day to do. And that, you know, and I do still have like about a 2-hour window. So I'm hoping to start putting out some literature every day. But of course, after now, it kind of got in the way. I've sort of queued myself up where I have to do all these projects before I can get back to the books. And of course, books are a very long project to do. It takes like 3 or 4 months to crank out a book. And that's just, you know, the birthing process, never mind, you know, the editing process, which anyone who's ever done code knows sucks ass. I hate editing. I hate it. But what I'm going to wind up doing, I think, is I'm going to wind up going through the stuff I write each day that I write it. My general goal as a writer is 2,000 words a day every day. And if I can pull that off and edit it every day, I should be doing good. And, you know, you do the math. 5 days a week, that's 10,000 words a week, blah, 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 blah. You know, your average book that you buy at a novel store is 450 words a page, blah, blah, blah. So that's sort of the goal, you know, and you got to make allowances for, you know, falling down or getting sick or whatever. I don't particularly believe in writer's block. Some people talk about writer's block. I don't believe in it. I don't think it's a real thing. I think it's just people going, I don't want to write, and they let their baggage drag them down. And that's not a small thing, mind you. I mean, a lot of writers, you spend huge time in your head. You just go inside your head and go. And I've got three different books started. Meat Puppet Brad, and what was the other one? Meat Puppet Brad, there's another one in there as well. The Madness Chronicles, I think, was another one that I was going on. I have this dream to write this huge series, you know, because that's usually what happens. You get a writer, writes a book, writes another book, and then he starts getting really wiggy and starts trying to do, you know, amazing, you know, epic things. You know, he thinks of himself as Tolkien. And I don't want to go that way myself, because, you know, you see where that goes. But not to droll on and on and on about my writing, thank you so much, buddy, for the letter. That really did make a difference in my life. On to some digital feedback now. Dear Sean, the reason why becoming a WOG attracts me to the WOG way of life. Now, this is kind of an excerpt. I sort of chopped this up, but I thought this was pretty significant. Dear Sean, the reason why becoming a WOG attracts me to the WOG way of life is that it all makes sense. There's no bullshit of any sort. Yeah, if you cut the shit, things get a lot more simpler. Everything has a reason. Nothing is there just to be there. You do things that benefit yourself, your environment, your future generations. You don't give in to conformity and not the type of nonconformity that people claim to follow and hurts themselves. You don't do stupid shit just because media scares you into doing so. I fucking love it. I now go to the motto, what does it do? How well does it do it? Awesome shit, man. It all makes sense. So simple, so sensible. I suppose I should thank you for spearheading the WOG movement. You can only hope that the WOG movement will keep expanding. I'm sure it will. And that was from a reader whose name I'm going to withhold. Thank you so much for saying that. The WOG movement, though, is nothing new. I mean, this is... I've never actually... The quote is that nothing original has been written since Homer. And my only hopes to do anything original would be to, you know, take with my other writing. But when it comes to the WOG movement and what WOGs are, all I did was give it a name. I gave it a name and gave it a unifying name. When I ran Cult before, I tried to create subsects and everything like that. And through doing that, I realized that really everyone is part of the same team. There's just different methods of expression. We're all out there. We all have to look at the seriousness of our culture. We have to look at the seriousness of our direction of our lives. And we can't afford to be distracted. Yes, I'm a big fan of goths. Yes, I'm a big fan of artists and people who live artistic lives, because this is, in effect, what life is about. Despite what the pharmaceutical companies tell you, where, you know, if you think of what would happen now if Pfizer got a hold of Vincent van Gogh, you know, or Salvador Dali, or any of these guys, you know, who defined artistic expression as we understand it. Or maybe, you know, what if Leonard Cohen had gotten medicated, or Roger Waters, or any of the really great, you know, Jimi Hendrix. What if all these guys wound up getting, you know, looped out on whatever meds? You know, we wouldn't have the music, we wouldn't have the life, we wouldn't have the vibrance of life. And this is why, if you have not seen the film Equilibrium, with the guy's name who is an American Psycho, whose name is totally eluding me, and I'll remember halfway through the news show, Christian Bale? Am I right? I might be right. I got that name floating in my head, but I might be wrong there. Anyway, if you haven't seen the film Equilibrium, you will stop the show. Well, you can't. It's being broadcast. Well, anyway, you need to make sure you acquire the film Equilibrium and watch it, because it is, in fact, a mighty film. Probably one of my favorite films, and it also gives you the source of prosium. On to the news! Human cloning licenses granted. You know, this is gonna be the good stuff. The scientist who attracted the world's attention by cloning Dolly the sheep is about to take another major step for medical research, cloning human embryos and extracting stem cells to unravel the mysteries of muscle-wasting illnesses like Lou Gehrig's disease. Ian Wilmut, who led the team that created Dolly in Scotland's Rosslyn Institute in 1996, was granted a cloning license Tuesday by British regulators to study how nerve cells go awry to cause motor neuron disease. It's pretty heady stuff. The experiments do not involve creating cloned babies, but the license has nonetheless stirred fresh controversy over the issue and prompted abortion foes and other biological conservatives, to condemn the decision. Are we supposed to be appeased by Professor Wilmut's declarations that human embryos will be destroyed after experimentation and that his team has no intention of producing cloned babies? Asked Julia Millington of the London-based Pro-Life Alliance. All human cloning is intrinsically wrong and should be outlawed. However, the creation of cloned human embryos destined for experimentation and subsequent destruction is particularly abhorrent. Whatever, Luddite. Wilmut, speaking after announcement in Edinburgh, Scotland, defended the move. We all take for granted very much healthier life that we've now compared to with people 100 years ago. I think the majority of people support this type of research and hope it will be successful in helping bring useful treatment of disease like motor neuron disease. Okay, well, my buddy Smokehouse has got a type of motor neuron disease. If not, he's got some shit, which is very similar to that. I think he's got MS or something, but it's, you know, he's all gibbled. You know, his body's not working properly. He can't go to ninja school because he's got a walker. You know, and that's really shitty. So I was thinking about this the other day because there was a new story going back, and they were talking about using HIV, which is a disease, and they're modifying it to attack stem, to attack research and stuff like that, or to attack other diseases and tumors and shit. You know, fuck it, let's do it. You know, why not? You know, yeah, there's some risk there. Yeah, there's some risk there, but let's give her. You know, it's not like these clone babies are gonna like take over the earth or something. What the fuck are these people afraid of? You know, really, cloning is intrinsically wrong. What the fuck? Intrinsically wrong according to who? It should be outlawed. Okay, this is all from what the fuck is her name? What is your name, you stupid bitch? Julia Millington of the London-based Pro-Life Alliance. Yeah, okay, good for you. Julia, it's like this, lady. All human cloning is going to be necessary because, you know what, time marches on. We have to progress, we have to go forwards, and how are we ever going to get any good cybernetic implants and disprove the existence of God if we don't have clones? So, nice try, bitch. Please try more later. But that's what's going on in the world. Now, here's a sexy little story, which I'm a really big fan of. We got some new body armor tech on the market. Yes. And I love it when guys in scientific journals refer to Snow Crash. Because I, you know, once again, I've got a hard-on for that book. Science fiction writer Neal Stephenson, who rules, wrote the arachno fiber uniforms in his 1992 novel, Snow Crash. These bulletproof and lightweight uniforms were worn by the Deliverators, the world's best pizza delivery guys. Carbon nanofibers can now be spun like yarn to make amazing variety of new inventions possible. Okay, uber fabric, including lightweight bulletproof uniforms. Now, the problem with this, of course, is that even though it's a bulletproof uniform, if you get shot with, say, a 45, it's still like getting hit in the chest with a sledgehammer. Among the many possibilities, soft protected vests, stronger than Kevlar, bandages can now contract to put pressure on things, and that, of course, stops bleeding, and bleeding is what kills you on the battlefield. Artificial muscles, powered by electricity, much lighter than current hydraulics. Oh, God, that's sexy. It would make it easier to incorporate electronic sensors and actuators in clothing. So, are you telling me then we could get power armor like spandex? Because it seems to me that's where you're going with this. You take spandex, that's your muscle mass, or a material like spandex, and then you just put on, like, we start getting real Ninja Gaiver here, getting very tight-fitting body armor. That's hot. All the possible applications derive from remarkable properties of carbon nanotubes, the ability to conduct both heat and electricity, along with the extreme toughness of the fiber. The researchers created a yarn by growing mat of fibers on a substrat called a nanotube forest. A nanotube forest, here in the nanotube forest. A sharp pointed instrument that pulled at the fibers along the plane of the substrate. Atkinson, not the diet guy, said the tubes then formed a conga line. Man, I love these scientists who like using, and then it made a conga line. We all like partied. Yeah, none of these guys are smoking shit. And they twisted and wrapped around each other as they were pulled. As long as there are fibers in the forest, you can make the yarn as long as you want. You can... Now, there's a quote to put on the end of an email. As long as there's fibers in the forest, you can make yarn as long as you want. You get a very even strand, he said. Most people say how you can spin something. It's one-third of a millimeter long, but its length to diameter... How can you spin something that's one-third of a millimeter long? Holy crap. But its length to diameter ratio is what matters. We use fibers with 10 nanometer diameter and put in lots of wraps. So, that's very cool. I mean, anything that can get me power armor and bulletproof clothing, I'm hot. That's hot. Gotta like it. We'll use it. We'll dress our clones in the bulletproof clothing. So far, that's good. And then after we dress our clones in bulletproof clothing so that, you know, because, of course, if they're clones, maybe they won't get human rights. Well, should they get human rights? I don't know. I'm trying to, you know, string these stories together, find some sort of common thread. Okay, so let's see. We want to fight the core political, so we'll VAT grow a perfect resistance power armor pilot. We'll make some spandex power armor for him, and then we'll buy him a 1968 Cadillac to drive around in because, although in-car navigation systems and entertainment devices have become the most versatile signs of technology's intrusion into the automobile, new types of safety features will constitute one of the largest markets of chipmakers toiling in the U.S. car market, said engineers at the International Solid State Circuits Conference, or ISSCC, here this week. Now, the reason where they're going with this is that your car is eventually going to be able to not do what you tell it to. Okay, you don't pilot the car. You, like, suggest things to the car and it makes a decision on its own, which I'm all about. Fuck that. We expect the highest growth in safety and infotainment categories. Now, this is a quote. Infotainment categories. We expect the highest growth in safety and infotainment categories, said Masayuki Hattori, a researcher with Integrated Circuits Division of Toyota. There it is. Infotainment used as an actual word by, you know, an engineer discussing, you know, modern products. Along with technologies being looked at from the intermediate future and radar and camera systems that warn drivers of objects in their blind spot or ahead of them on the road. That's fine. I'm into that. I'm going to hook that up to a friend or foe system. For instance, Hattori showed off a concept called Night View, which a near-infrared camera, captures images of people, animal, or objects on the road beyond what can be seen with the headlights. NEC, meanwhile, provided details on sensor systems that give visual information to the drivers. Well, that's very kind of Knight Rider-y, but I'd like to see it applied. As time goes on, electronics will increasingly take over more of the driving functions and even control traffic flow. You want to go to the next lane? You will be prevented from doing so. I wonder what our reaction will be, said Herman Cassier, researcher from Belgium's AMI Semiconductor. Well, I'll tell you what the reaction will be there, Herman. It'll be that we'll go, well, we're switching to manual, and then we're going to go drive manually. By 2010, the driving skills that we all have should be less useful, he speculated. So that's what he says by 2020. And cars, apparently, will drive themselves by 2040. Yeah, okay, whatever, pal. The push towards safety, of course, comes from the still larger number of traffic accidents in Western Europe alone. Approximately 40,000 people die and 1.6 million get injured in traffic accidents annually, said Patrick Lettiner of Infion Technologies. Okay, well, the reason why they're going to try to take away our ability to drive and travel is aforementioned for the flying cars thing. You know, they don't want to give us more transportation. They want to be able to regulate our transportation even better. You know, so if we can't speed, you know, everyone moves along just nicely, get inside your little pod. You go from your cage to your pod. It drives you to your place of work. You then get out. You make your widgets all day. You know, you go to the mall after work. You make sure you purchase your widget. And then you go home, throw the widget out, and go to bed. You know, and repeat. Make sure you take your medication. La, 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 la. Now, I would sooner buy a Harley than I would get involved with a car that will not let me change lanes. How about you eat a bag of dicks? Not going to happen for me. Thanks so much. Instead, I'm going to move to Kansas. Why? Because they're giving away land. At least 10 Kansas communities are offering free land to attract residents to boost school enrollment and fatten the tax base, report on the Associated Press and USA Today. Why? Many Great Plains towns are desperate to survive. Young people don't stay because they get saturated with media. They don't see that the advantage of not, there's nothing in the cities, don't go there. Old people die. And before you know it, the storefronts are boarded up and nothing is more than a ghost town. So I think the WOG should move to someplace in Kansas. We'll get a little bit of financial backing and we'll build WOGland, the world's first free entertainment park. Giving away land to Great Plains settlers harkens back to the homesteading days of the 1800s. Steve Piper, the mayor of Marquette, Kansas, population 620, thinks the key to survival is the school system. In a small community, you have to keep the school system. Every child you bring in is more money for the schools. The schools are the backbones of the community. Well, I think the people are actually the backbone of the community. Move to Marquette, and the town will give you a parcel of land valued at $8,000. Ooh, provide you build a home on it within 1 year and live in it for a year. The town has built streets and new neighborhoods and provide hookups for water, electricity, sewers, and gas. The one family at a time approach is working. In less than a year, the town's population has increased by 100 people. After all, it's hard to put a monetary value on a town where people still sit on their front porches in the evening. You know, that's got to be a certain, I may be sitting on my porch in the evening with a laptop, but, you know, I could see me being a crotchety old dude sitting on the porch with a shotgun beside me and the laptop and, you know, my droids running around the yard. I could see that. I guess we're so stubborn that we're not going to let our town die, Piper told USA Today. Ellsworth, E-L-L-W-O-R-T-H, Kansas, calls it the Welcome Home Plan. Now, that sounds vaguely cultish. You build a house, you get the lot for free. You also receive $1,000 towards a down payment on a house for each child you have that will attend the local schools. This is getting painfully like farming. They'll even help you find a job. Results are encouraging. USA Today says Ellsworth boasts 24 new residents, four of whom reserve free lots. They also have 16 new school children and draw $6,000 each in additional state education aid. Okay, well, you know, it's cool that there's land being given away and people can go there. So that's something that, you know, hey, that's here to help you survive. I'm not really concerned, but it seems like, you know, these people are probably out in the prairies there. They're probably not going to, you know, be the first people signing up to get wet wired. But what the hell? You know, I've oftentimes thought that if donations were to go through the roof and I was able to build, you know, the mosques all across North America and the cities and stuff like that so that people had places to go and free encryption and free email and an intranet security system where we can keep information free and all these wonderful ideas I have, if that was to really take off, what would we do with the money? Because, of course, it's going to make a profit. And I've always thought it'd be great to set up this great big freaking commune. There, I said it. Sure, why not? What the hell? Why don't we build like a city slash commune slash place where people can go? And everybody's thought about this. You know, a place where people can just be people. People can be free. You know, we could have our own research facilities in there. We could have people go to schools all over the country, come back, build Mecca, work on our own little security force. It'd be great. It'd be great. I totally think it's a good idea. I don't know why we don't do it. Here's a really bad idea, though. Here's a fucking horrible idea. This is about the worst idea I've seen in a while. I can't believe they actually came out with this. But here it is. Yes, disposable DVDs. Because we just don't throw enough shit away. And I love how this bullshit article was written, too. Check this out. There's a revolutionary new idea in the world of home entertainment. No, it's not a revolutionary new idea. But nice try. The FlexPay company. Not FlexPay, which is what it should be called. It's actually called the FlexPlay. Company is offering a 48-hour disposable DVD. Yeah. CEO Jeff Arnold said it's an impressive, hassle-free idea that eliminates returns and late fees and creates massive, massive garbage. The way the technology operates is that you embed a chemical into the physical DVD and seal it. When you open it up, you have over a year, and you have over a year until you have to open it up, and it's exposed to oxygen. It creates a chemical reaction that turns a DVD black 48 hours later and makes it inoperable with a DVD player or erasing the content. Wow, that's great. For $4.99, you can go to Amazon.com, type in FlexPlay, and choose from about 60 different titles. Now, my question to you is, okay, if this is a DVD, right, and we can get it for $4.99, can we burn it? Like, can you copy it? Can you take it? Oh, pop, here we go, $4.99, got my movie here. Bang, into the machine it goes. I burn it to another disc to make a backup of my, you know, slowly eliminating data. What would be a better idea to do this would be to make burnable CDs that you could create like this so that if you wanted to send someone a snail mail message or like, you know, a self-destructing message, that'd be useful. I could see it used for that. But trying to market this shit to the MPAA, like, fuck off, guy. You know, furthermore, if this starts hitting the shelves and it starts really messing with us, well, you know what's going to happen? Everybody's going to pick up needles, go into the store, start jacking the packages, and pretty soon all your products are shot. Now, here's a story which I would like to say I'm surprised by, but unfortunately I'm not. Because, you know, once again, Donald Rumsfeld has the Gestapo working for him. He's got his own security force, special securities group, that, you know, answer only to him, and therefore the president, and they're able to do, quote-unquote, extra-legal actions in the United States. So we've got the Gestapo running around in the United States, answering to Donald Rumsfeld, and able to, you know, geek people at whim, you know, break laws, whatever they want to do, good all that good Splinter Cell stuff. Now, apparently, the U.S. has kidnapped a German dude. Nice. The case is extremely sensitive. No shit. A German citizen may have been kidnapped by American agents and illegally taken to Afghanistan. Okay, now, I really enjoy German people. Okay, the bullshit stops very quickly with German people. Okay, they're a great people. And it's funny for me to talk about them like a people or something. But generally, German people are really fucking cool. They make great music. They're very culturally sensitive now. I mean, yeah, they had some problems about, you know, 60 years ago now. But, you know, ever since then, they've learned their lesson. And they're really, really, you know, they're good people. They make great weapons. I mean, Heckler and Koch, all German, make good cars. You know, they know their shit. And furthermore, GSG-9, the German special forces there, you don't want to fuck with these guys, okay? So if a bunch of CIA dudes want to go and start fucking around with GSG-9, you're going to see a lot of dead American operatives is what you're going to see. I hate to say it, but it's true. I mean, these guys are, they're not to be fucked with, okay? Now, German authorities are quietly investigating the case. I wonder which, would that be GSG-9 investigating that? But no one here wants it to interfere with U.S.-German reapproachment. Well, you've already told us that you think Donnie's a war criminal. You were kidnapping your people. Can you be pissed at the Germans for getting pissed at us? The all-important piece of evidence is pitch black and about 20 centimeters long. It's a single strand of hair from the head of Khalid El-Masari, 41. Khalid El-Masari, 41. Spent most of his life in heavily oiled and slicked back. Now, the hair has become a global player. Current German-American relations largely hinge on this one strand of hair. Talk about the hair that was felt around the world. El-Masari, namely, is part of the most unusual criminal cases in recent years. The father of four claims he was kidnapped by a United States agent 1 year ago in Macedonia. carted off to a prison in Afghanistan and accused of being an Al-Qaeda terrorist. The hair may be able to confirm his story. Scientists at the Bavarian Archive for Geology in Munich are currently using a method called isotope analysis, which can search for trace elements such as sulfur to roughly determine whether where in the world El-Masari has been in recent months. So they don't believe him. They have to have actual evidence. Munich's Ludwig Maximilians University is world famous for the procedure. In fact, isotope analysis has helped solve many difficult crimes in the past. Okay, with this kind of political pressure and, probably GSG-9 being involved, and this at a German university that is famous for this, I would pretty much back what they say. If they come out and say, yeah, the son of a bitch was kidnapped and taken to Afghanistan, I'd buy it. According to initial results, El-Masari's story is in fact true. Ooh, danger. Fearing far-reaching global diplomatic consequences, the German government, however, wants to see the case treated rather discreetly. If I was the dude who got kidnapped, but I don't give a fuck who, got shipped off to some shithole like Afghanistan and spent time in the cells, getting, fucked around in any imaginable means, I'd be pretty torqued, and I wouldn't want this thing to be, all handled delicately. I mean, granted, I'd be pretty pissed. But, you got to know the German government, they're going to be talked about this. El-Masari's allegations are not directed at some random rogue state, but the most powerful nation in the world and close partner of Germany's government officials here are concerned. Oh, we like them, though. The explosive topic shouldn't, under any circumstances, harm transatlantic relations now that there has been, with U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice visit to Europe last week, a first notable sign of rapprochement between Germany and U.S. since the Iraqi conflict. I guess it's important. I don't know enough about economics. I just kind of look at things straight up and go, seems to me if you're kidnapping my people, that pisses me off. And I have a tendency, my flaw, my fault, my great curse, and why I'll never get anywhere in politics, is because I do this fucked up thing called putting people ahead of profits, I'm always for the boys. First and foremost, always for the boys. You got to look after your people because your people are the people who elected you and put your ass in power. If I was going to vote for someone, I'd ask, who is this guy loyal to? If he's loyal to the people, I'd put him in power. If he's loyal to money and big bucks and the core political, I'd be like, let's not put him in power. This is what the democratic process should be about. Of course, this doesn't really occur, but that's okay. That's okay. Now, in a very sad story, another soldier has died. And they call this suicide, but I wouldn't call it suicide. The words haunt Lisette Green as she struggles to understand what happened with the man she loved. Home from fighting in Iraq, he had grown depressed and distant as he witnessed thousands of his fellow soldiers head off to war. Curtis Green was angry about the war and frustrated with Lisette for not understanding what it had been like there. They argued so fiercely that twice the police had to break it up. Gone was the man smiling with her and the kids in family photos. He was not the person I knew when he came back from Iraq. How many times have we heard that, eh? Guy goes to war, comes back a different human being. One night he disappeared from their home outside of Fort Riley, Kansas. Lisset and the kids went to stay at her father's house in Hernando County. When he called to apologize for running out, he promised he would come home to Fort Riley, but he wasn't about to return to Iraq. Quote, over my dead body, are they going to take me back? End quote. I knew he was having dreams, nightmares, Lisset said. He would wake up at night really sweaty. On December 6, he showed up for work, his uniform pressed, his boots polished, he sang the cadets. That night, he was found hanging in the barracks. Sergeant Curtis Green, 331st Signal Company, was 25 years old. So, Buddy was fucked up. He went to Iraq, got a head full of snakes, came back home, couldn't hack it, and fucking strung himself up. And that is another casualty of Iraq. And people, they hear me talk about the suicide rant, The suicide rant, the purpose of the suicide rant is to just give people that little bit extra in the times of crisis. Okay, when you're actually sitting there and you got the warm bowl of water out, you need just something to hold on to make you put the razor down. And that's what the suicide rant was. That's why I did it. It was to stop the kids from going to the bridge. That was the whole purpose of that rant. Now, when you look at this guy here, this is a totally different kettle of fish. Okay, this guy, the human mind, okay, and this is a fact, and you may not believe this, but trust me on this one, boys and girls. The human mind is an extremely, extremely sensitive thing. And with the amount of research that's being done into the human mind, we're beginning to figure out that it's got nothing to do with bravery, it's got nothing to do with your psyche, it's got nothing to do with any of that shit. Anybody can be reduced to a drooling ball of shit if they're subjected to artillery fire for, 4 days or something like that? Everyone gives in to torture. There is no, you know, ubermensch mentality that you can adhere to that will save your ass. Some things will keep you maintaining longer than others. And this poor son of a bitch wound up going over there, getting himself all fucked up, which is not his fault. Okay, he's just trying to do what is right. You know, he's got a family, he's got his wife and his kids, and he's trying to, you know, live the dream. He goes over there, gets a head full of snakes, comes back, doesn't get the help he needs. Okay, there ought to be, like, monitor. You want to monitor people? You want to monitor for terrorist action? You want to monitor for all this stuff? You should be monitoring your soldiers so that when the cops showed up at his house twice for a domestic dispute, there should have been a flag raised, okay? Somebody should have said, well, you know, because the Army does this. They watch that kind of shit. You can bet if Buddy was posting to a weblog, they'd have been all over him, right? So if he's suddenly, you know, he's abusing or he's getting abusive towards his family, he's getting distance, got the 1,000-yard stare on the go, we need to get that guy some help. And this is only the beginning, people, okay? This is the stuff we hear about. There's a lot of these soldiers going to be coming back. And I, Christ, you know, if I could, if I could take these people's pain away, even if it killed me, I would. Because it's so sad. These young, noble, brave human beings going out into the desert, into the dark, and seeing, you know, horror after horror after horror, and being exposed to these unbelievable stresses of combat. And some people can handle it rather well. Some people can take it in and try to digest it, and they deal with it in their own way, and some people can do that. And very, very slow percentage of the population can do that. But when the veil is ripped away and you see what's really going on, it's very, very hard. So my heart goes out to Sergeant Curtis Green's family, to his children, and there's nothing you can really say. So what I'm just going to say is I'm just going to draw attention to this. And if you know of anyone in your community who's coming back from the war or whatever, please get a hold of that book, you know, On Killing by Steve Grossman, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Grossman, so you understand the psychological impacts of warfare and combat. So you can, it gives suggestions in there about what you can do to help war vets. Please, I implore you, because these people need help, and they're too far gone by the time they come back. We've got to, you know, save some of these people. Because, God, you know, support your troops, okay? And don't just, it doesn't mean putting a flag up and a sticker on your car literally is the least you can do, okay? And the last thing that nobody wants, I'm not asking you to give anybody money. I'm just saying that these people need people to talk to, and they need to know that that they're loved, that they're understood, that it's going to be okay, and that they're going to come out of this on top. I've oftentimes thought, you know, I've read a lot of stuff about during the Vietnam conflict. There was apparently a lot of the peace activists used to go to soldiers and shit all over them, call them baby killer and stuff like that. That is fucking retarded to do that. That is, it makes no sense whatsoever. There's no point in doing that. It does nothing to promote anything. What hippies should be doing, the hippies, you know, anyone who's a hardcore peace activist, should be giving these soldiers hugs. They should be saying, it's okay, man, we understand. And even if the soldier's angry, even if he's like, fuck you, hippie, that's like, it's okay, dude. When you change your mind, give me a call, okay? When you think that you might be wrong, it's okay. No one's going to say, I told you so. All right, you're trying to do something that you believe, and that's fine. We need to love these soldiers. We need to make sure they're accepted. Not fucking, you know, throw eggs at them and shit all over them, call them baby killer and think that they're a bunch of right wing. Whatever, dude. People make mistakes, okay? Let's have a little bit of grace for the soldiers. That's all I'm saying here. Now, the USA has bailed on the Kyoto Protocol, which, no big surprise here. The rest of the world is understanding that, you know, hey, we've got about 10 years left before we reach the point of no return, and the planet's essentially fucked. The Kyoto Protocol, the landmark treaty requiring cuts in gas emissions, which causes global warming, took effect Wednesday with the support of 141 nations, but a boycott by the biggest polluter, the United States. And you wonder why foreign opinion of the United States is fucked. We're kidnapping Germans. We're poisoning the world. The 34 industrialized companies have been ratified, and the treaty are legally bound to slash the 34 industrialized countries which have ratified the treaty are legally bound to slash output of greenhouse gases by 5.2% before 2012. 5.2%. Jesus. And America didn't want to do that measly 5.2%. That's pretty fucking weak. Which targets set for each nation based upon their 1990 levels. The treaty, which was reached in this ancient Japanese capital in 1997, amid the fear that the rise in global temperatures could eventually lead to droughts and extinction of some species, like man, we sincerely welcome that the framework in which the world will cooperate to stop global warming has finally come into effect, Japanese Prime Minister Juniku Kuzinami Koizumi, Kuizumi, Mr. Japanese Samurai guy said. The United States pulled out of Kyoto in 2001 as one of President George W. Bush's first acts in office, saying it would hurt the U.S. economy. Well, shit! If it hurts the U.S. economy, who gives a fuck, right? You know, it's only the planet. Blue ball, George. You know, eventually, when, you know, your cowboy hat freezes to your fucking head due to the next ice age, maybe you'll clue in. Maybe you'll go, oops, drop the ball there. And here's another reason why, you know, eventually you'll be getting your news entirely from independent sources, because apparently there's no First Amendment right for reporters. Now, try to understand things like Deep Throat and these reporters that they have whistleblowers that come to these major mainstream reporters and give them information under the understanding that, of course, they'll be protected. Otherwise, they're going to wind up dead in a ditch somewhere with some Gestapo bullet in their head. But apparently, two reporters who have refused to name their sources to a grand jury investigating the disclosure of identity of a covert CIA agent should be jailed on contempt charges. A three-judge panel of the Federal Appeals Court in Washington ruled unanimously today, citing a 1972 decision under the United States Supreme Court. The panel held that reporters Judith Miller of the New York Times and Matthew Cooper of Time Magazine have no First Amendment protection from a grand jury subpoena seeking to learn the identity of their sources. Under a 1982 law, it can be a crime for government officials to divulge their identities to divulge the identities of covert agents. The 1972 decision, okay, this is 36 years ago. In the 1972 decision, Brandenburg versus Hayes considered four consolidated grand jury cases, including one in which reporter witnessed illegal drugs being made. In today's opinion, the panel said Supreme Court's transparent and forcible reasoning in that case applied to the two reporters before the appeals court now. In language as relevant to the alleged illegal disclosure of the identity of covert agents as it was to the alleged illegal processing of hashish, yeah, you know, that's a big threat, that hash. The panel wrote, the court stated that it could not seriously entertain the notion that First Amendment protects the newsman's agreement to conceal criminal conduct of his source or evidence thereof on the theory that it is better to write about a crime than to do something about it. Yeah, fuck you, pal. It's on the theory that it is better to write about a crime than to do something about it. Excuse me, writing about the crime is doing something about it. It's like saying if you see something... By that definition, if you see something and you phone the cops, you've done nothing. That's what they're saying here, because it's better to write about a crime than to do something about it. Well, if you write about it, you're notifying people, aren't you? Unless, of course, you write about it in your diary and throw it under your bed. I mean, nice try. But how are reporters supposed to be reporting the truth to you? If they get stuff and they know that their First Amendment rights are getting fucked, how are they going to report the news to you that you really need to hear? As it sits right now, I mean, 60 Minutes had a news story pulled about a hormone in milk. They fired the whole crew. It's in the film The Corporation. If you haven't seen the film Corporation, check that out. But, I mean, it's not illegal for the media to lie to you. And now they're making it so that the media will do nothing but lie to you by suspending the First Amendment rights of reporters. Like, Jesus Christ, is journalism really dead? Is the internet the last bastion of free speech? It appears that way. Now... also in modern media, aside from, you know, the fact that they no longer have First Amendment rights, they're now up on war crimes. You know, the media has fallen so far. My God, you know, I guess I'm part of the media, the modern media. You know, I'm independent media, but that still makes me media. And it's sad that this is probably true, but the media is being held on war crimes. A People's Tribunal has held much of Western media guilty of inciting violence and deceiving people of its reporting in Iraq. The World Tribunal on Iraq, the W2EI, an international people's initiative seeking the truth about the war's occupation in Iraq, has made its pronouncement Sunday after a three-day meeting. The tribunal heard testimony from independent journalists, media professors, activists, and members of the European Parliament. Michel Santoro. The Rome session of the W2EI followed others in Brussels, London, Mumbai, New York, Hiroshima/Tokyo, Copenhagen, Stockholm, and Lisbon. The Rome meeting focused on the media role. The informal panel of WTI judges accused the United States and the British governments of impeding journalists in the performance of their task and intentionally producing lies and misinformation. Well, they were kind of fed lies and misinformation. That film I watched in New York, which is a great documentary by an amazing war correspondent, Weapons of Mass Deception, right after you pick up... Equilibrium, you want to make sure you get a copy of Weapons of Mass Deception. Buy that. It's a good one. The panel accused Western corporate media of filtering and suppressing information and of marginalization of and endangering independent journalists. Ooh, that's a good one. More journalists were killed in the 14-month period of Iraq than the entire Vietnam War. There's a spec for you. The tribunal said mainstream media reporting on Iraq also violated Article 6 of the Nuremberg Tribunal, set up to try Nazi war crimes, which states leaders, organizers, instigators, and accomplices participating in the formation or execution of a common plan or conspiracy to commit any of the foregoing crimes, crimes against peace, war crimes, crimes against humanity, are responsible for all acts performed by any persons in extensions of such a plan. Of course, by that same law, IBM and... especially IBM is guilty of war crimes because they're the ones who tracked all the Jews that got killed. You know, no one talks about that. But, you know, whatever. So, yeah, there it is. I guess what they're saying here is that, you know, Fox Media and CNN and all these guys are actually nothing more than propaganda mills. And people like yours truly, who are on the ground trying to give you the truth, were getting geeked wholesale. Yeah, we're dying. And, of course, another ruling has come down where there's no liability for biotech. Now, this article is written very much on the angle that biotechnology is a good thing. Okay, but check this out. Biotechnology supporters overrode questions on the state Senate about the proper share of legal liability, the proper share of legal liability for biotech wheat seed developers, defeating the bill that they believe would stifle innovation. Stifle innovation. The legislation would be harmful to the biotech industry. Well, Jesus, wouldn't want that, said Senator Robert Herbal, R. Lear. It would seriously hurt North Dakota's chances for creating a climate for research and development. Opponents of biotech wheat fears its introduction in North Dakota will ruin the state's overseas export markets in Japan and Europe, where many consumers are skeptical about the benefits of genetically modified food. Now, on some levels, genetically modified food is a good thing. If it can feed the world, fucking A. But I don't want, somebody just copywriting all the foods so that you can't buy a loaf of bread without making sure that Monsanto gets some of the cash. They supported legislation introduced by Senator Connie Triplett from Grand Forks that would require biotech seed developers to bear much of the legal responsibility if their crop spreads to fields or grain bins where it wasn't wanted. So the seeds now can go wherever they want, and these biotech companies aren't liable for them. Senators defeated the legislation 30-14 on Monday. If this bill were to pass, this puts us on an island we can't afford to be on. Profits over people, said Tim Falco. We'd be in the only state in the United States to have this. Well, shit, wouldn't want to be a pioneer. Farmers who use biotech seed are usually required to sign contracts in which they assume responsibility for damage the seed may cause to neighboring fields. Oh, good. Put it on the farmers. Why not? You know, Monsanto's putting farmers in jail anyway for keeping seeds, you know, for seed piracy. Triplett said her bill was intended to give farmers more leverage in those agreements. Well, nice try. Didn't really work, though. So once again, government in bed with big business. Nothing new there. Now, here's something a little bit new, which they're talking about it for computer gamers. Like, isn't this great? Except for the fact that they're measuring brainwaves and going to use this in advertising. Try to imagine how this can be abused. Now, it can't be avoided, but we have to watch it and make sure that it is not abused. And if they start putting this in products, we want to know that it's being used and how it could be used against us. Okay? Measuring of excitement. It might be dropping down the sheer slope of a virgin powder slope. It might be fumbling with an office colleague during an illicit lunch meeting. It might be running from computer aliens on another planet or simply gorging on a bar of chocolate in the middle of the night. What thrills us depends on your personal hopes, fears, loves, and desires. But now, a British designer working with a computer scientist is creating a machine that can measure the experience of thrill. The hope is to create an industry-standard measure that can be used to gauge thrilling experiences and ultimately dynamically modify such experiences in real time. For computer gamers, the prospect is tantalizing. For the rest of us, we're terrified by this. Okay, could you imagine making it exciting to go to work? Not only can they medicate you now, what if they could make it so that, you know, by emitting a field or certain frequencies, you'd be happy and excited about going to work? Holy cow! I get to make widgets all day! I'm so happy I could just shit! Brendan Rocker, a research fellow at the Royal College of Art in London, has already built an auto-portrait machine that detects the sensation of thrill by utilizing galvanic skin responses, or GSR, a measure of conductivity of skin often used in lie detectors, which don't work. The idea is that when the nervous system is aroused, such as when one is lying, the skin sweats and becomes more conductive. During sudden visceral pleasures, for example, fairground rides, the sympathetic nervous system becomes aroused, said Walker. This gives a huge increase in skin conductance. For Walker's photographic purposes, however, the peak of conductance comes after the facial expression he wants to capture. I therefore used an algorithm set to look for the onset of peak arousal, which is characterized by initial high rate of change. It greatly reduces system latency and said to him, the autoportrait machine is thus set up. He was able to catch the very peak moment of thrill. Now Walker wants to take his ideas further and builds what he calls the thrill measuring device. Based on the same GSR technology, the proposed device will work as a thrill sensor during fairground rides or computer games and modify the experience accordingly. Now, how can that be used to fuck us over in advertising? I ask you, how can that be used? I mean, how can that not be used by advertising? You know, you watch an ad, they gauge your responses, they get all sweaty and hot, and oh my God. You know, you're going to try to sell us this under the guise of computer gaming? Nice try, punk. You know entirely that once that gets laid down, that the corporate advertising is going to be all over that. They're the ones going to be throwing money at it, and they got more money than the video game companies do. Sorry, it's just the truth. Now, here's one that is, I didn't know that they were putting RFID tags mandatorily in hospitals, but apparently, in Birmingham, Heartlands Hospital in England, what a shock, holy cow, in England, who would know that England would be the first people putting RFID on patients? It has become the first NHS hospital to radio tag patients. The hospital has installed radio tracking system throughout the hospital. It can find and identify patients using standard radio frequency identification RFID tags. We should put this in nut houses, too. So when people like me get arrested, they can just insert like some tag into my back somewhere where obviously I can't reach it, because if I can, I'll rip it out. The announcement comes just after a week when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration controversially gave approval to implantable radio tags, previously only used on prisoners in California. Well, I didn't even know the prisoners in California were getting tagged like this, but that's okay. The FDA's approval brought widespread protests from civil rights groups. The Birmingham radio tagging will involve standard wrist tags on patients. Oh, so they're not embedding it in the person. They're just going to give it on your wrist tag that, you know, doesn't come off. So it's like a little handcuff made of plastic. The developer of the Birmingham Heartland system, British firm Intelligent Medical Microsystems, claims that the installation is the first tracking system that has been installed anywhere to, quote-unquote, mistake-proof medical procedures, such as surgery through passive decision support technology. Well, I'd hope that if I'm able to come out with some sort of way to jimmy the RFID tag of me and a fellow patient, and we swap bracelets, I wouldn't get his surgery. I hope we have more than just this RFID tag, which can be reprogrammed, by the way. The hospital is currently running a pilot of the technology on patients undergoing ear, nose, and throat surgery. The aim of the system is to make sure surgeons carry out the right procedures on the right patients every time. As opposed to what they're doing now, are they not carrying out the right procedures on the right patients every time? The hospital will also use this system to ensure patients are given the right prescriptions and identify patients with infections such as MRSA to help stop the infection from spreading. Well, this is great. They're making it sound like all this RFID stuff is making all this possible now, but it's not making it possible. It's just a different method of doing it, and what they're not talking about the downside. Patients are tagged on arrival. Photographs are taken of them and digitized into an electronic record. A wireless network tracks each patient and brings up his or her record at key points within the hospital, such as inside the operating theater. Theater. The photograph allows the clinical team to confirm they have the right patient and electronically record, and the electronic record ensures they perform the correct procedure. Well, that's great if you don't mind, you know, selling your soul to whatever, but I would opt to have the option of whether or not I want to have an RFID tag tied to me. And then it comes to the question of what happens to that information, that digital photo, after you leave the hospital. I had my tonsils out. What's happening with that digital photograph? Oh, that gets sent to the Matrix and all part of Interpol. And now we've got, you know, exactly where you went. And Mr. Kennedy, it seems that you were in a ward for a little while there. Well, that's because I was arrested and put in the ward. Well, it seems you were in a psych ward for 2 days. Yeah, because they arrested me and they handcuffed me and they threw me in a psych ward. Oh, well, you spent time in a psych ward then. Yes, yes. You see how this can be spun? You see how that can work? It's just freaking great. Now, today's daily hack is a big, fat, default password list. And for all you newbies out there who don't know shit about shit, that's okay, because that's why I'm here. Quite often, when people have networks or modems or anything else like that, Wi-Fi, they don't change their default password, or sometimes, even in a few cases, the default password continues to work on certain hardware. And I got it sent to me, this huge default password list for equipment. So should you be out somewhere and you come across your own personal little device and you can't remember what the default password was after you reset it, because if you get a hold physically of the device, you can physically reset them. And then, of course, the default password comes into being. Well, now you can just go to this list, find out the default password, and you gain access and can therefore lawfully and legally set your network back up again. Because that's what we do here. We only do lawful and legal things here. And that's all I've got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to avoid RFID tagging and help you get body armor and everything else you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of the greatest people who have ever walked the face of the earth. That would be Jesse, Anonymous and Anonymous, who I love, Jesse, Grey Ghost, Robert, Forley, Michael, Matthew, Matt, Kevin, Derek, Jesse, Desert Runner, Eric, Speaker, Jeff, Malcolm, Peter, Keith, Timor, WebLife, Richard, Greg, Evan, Matt, Drake, Levi, Ashton, David, Brian, Austin, Tara, Host Mojo, Jonathan, Adam, Mystique, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Art, Darmude, Peter, Jesse, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Dylan, Lars, Daniel, Anonymous, and Philip. And if you would like to join the greatest people who have ever lived, you can help keep this daily news broadcast on the air by visiting rantmedia.ca and click on the little donate tab, because really every dollar counts. And it does help me do what I do so that I can get the books out, get the information you need. And of course, everything I produce, I'm going to be just giving out to you guys, including After Now and all the rest of it. So it's about freeing up time, guys, because I've only got so much of it. And I'll give all I can to you. Special thanks to some hard Netrunners who free up huge time for me. And these people help me so much. Transix, Sylvanus, PolySci, Ricky Rocket, Desert Runner, Quest D4, Kevlar Glibs, Plasmonic Grid, and Astrofix. Thank you, guys. You guys totally make my day. Digital Baptisms today. We got two of them. Mizanow is now Sacred Mace. And E-Pagan is now Lensman. Okay, that's E-Pagan is now Lensman, and Mezanow is now Sacred Mace. And if you have any sensitive information or you want advice, I haven't had any sort yourself out questions in a while. If you've got any problems in your life, you want me to give, the Sean Kennedy Wog take on it, I'll do my best. Please send, your questions, any news stories you come across, stuff that you think should be outed to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, which is kind of different, I kind of went with different stuff this today. It's a little bit more mellow, but I thought it was cool. You want to check out 7ARC, and the album is called Noise of the New. It's a little bit more experimental, a little bit more ambient, but I figured that, hey, if I keep giving you stuff you've already heard of, or maybe you've heard of these guys, whatever, we're all on the bleeding edge out here. So check out 7ARC, Noise of the New. Very, very cool album. A little bit different, but I like it. So until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
child of them all as well. Surely we will meet again, but only time will tell. Drawing through the bells. So I've one last thing to tell you now.